She has been behind bars for 10 months. Now the mother of the Oxford high school shooter is asking a judge to toss her conviction for her role in the shooting. How is this even possible? Is there a chance that this could happen? Todd Flood, an attorney at Flood Law, joining us to talk a little bit about the chances of this case. Hi, Todd. Always a pleasure to talk with you.
Pleasure is mine. Thanks for having me.
So I think the big question when people saw this, first of all, some of us didn't think this was a surprise, but overall, people are wondering, does she have a chance on this case? What are your thoughts?
Well, definitely not a surprise because she has a right to an appeal.
Right.
She doesn't have to ask for permission. It's an automatic right when she's found guilty. So that was coming. This is an appointed attorney to her. So we knew this was going to happen. Now the question is, what claims, if any, make sense? Is there anything here? So as far as the charge and the conviction go, no. I think the Court of Appeals has already addressed it. Really, you know, several courts have. It was reasonably foreseeable that if you give this shooter a gun in the paranoid state that he was in, that it was spiraling out of control, that it was reasonably foreseeable that he was either going to harm himself or others. So you wouldn't give your keys to your child if your child was intoxicated beyond belief and said, hey, or go drive the car on 696. You'd be held accountable. Here, same thing happened. It happens all the time where charges come when parents leave their gun out and children are around. How many times have we seen that charge come up? This is the first time in the United States where a mass shooting took place, so that's why there's this novel concept to it. Now, are there any, you know, deficiencies in this trial that would make it so that would get reversed? The only thing that really is potentially, I think, a sticking point here is the proffer agreement, the agreements that the witnesses from the school received that in essence said, hey, listen, here, we're not going to use this information you give us against you. If you do, you know, then we'll come up with a way of, you know, working that out. That's, you know, smells like a leniency test of some sort, you know. So that proffer agreement, we consider that Brady material. What's Brady? Brady is any kind of evidence that could lead to exculpatory evidence. In other words, could it help the defense and leading to showing that their client is innocent in this case? And prosecutors are duty bound to turn over everything that you know, you're better to turn it over than not, obviously. And here that's going to be a significant issue in the Court of Appeals. But the avalanche of evidence, the weight of the evidence was so heavy in this case that, you know, is it going to be a harmless error issue? I'm not quite sure. The fact of the matter, that's the biggest issue in this case, and that's what the court is going to have to decide. Then it's in the circuit courts, and they're just preserving all their rights. So be prepared with the, you know, put your seatbelt on, because once this decision's made, it'll go to the next court in the Court of Appeals. So we'll hear about this again.
So at the crux of the matter here are these two employees of Oxford High School, the counselor, Sean Hopkins, and the former dean of students, Nicholas Ejacht. Now, they both testified, okay, and the defense attorneys are saying that they made crucial mistakes on the day of the shooting. Namely, they didn't search the backpack, which, you know, still kind of remains a mystery as to why that happened. But they testified in her trial. And what they're saying is, what this new case is saying, is that the school witnesses wanted to avoid being prosecuted themselves over what they did that day. So maybe the way they testified kind of colored or was shifted to put the responsibility on Jennifer Crumley, so that it, you know, it impacted how they testified, in other words.
Right.
So how has that ever, have you ever seen a case like that before? I mean, this is really problematic as I see it.
All the time. I see it all the time. And sometimes jurors take it into consideration. I was just in a 4-week jury trial in federal court, and a witness received a proffer agreement. And so during my cross-examination, witness, you received a proffer agreement. Yes. So everything and anything you said in that proffer agreement couldn't be used against you. Is that right? Yes. All right. So it can't be used against you, but you have to tell the truth. Yes. Who determines the truth? Oh. Is it this table over here that's the government, the prosecutor? So if you testify in their favor, or they're the ones that say, okay, we won't prosecute you. So that is a hint of how a cross-examination would take place of a witness on a stand that received an agreement that had in it, you can't lie. You know, it's the old Martha Stewart case, because Martha Stewart, she got prosecuted for lying to the FBI in the proffer agreement. Here, who determines whether or not you tell the truth? It's not the jury witness. It is the prosecutor. So it is an issue. And I, as a defense attorney, would want that opportunity to cross-examine that witness to test their credibility. Mm-hmm. Are they truth tellers or not truth tellers? I want to be able to, you know, is bring sunshine and cross-examination to open up the hood and see whether or not, you know, the jury is swayed one way or the other. Here's the thing. Was the counselor and the dean of students, think about this, did they fail to act? And that's a misdemeanor. If they failed to act, if they had a duty, you first got to establish that. And if they had that duty and they knew or should have known with reasonable minds that something bad was going to happen, but yet they failed to act, they could have been potentially charged with misdemeanor. Now, they weren't. Now I understand that's under investigation, but that's one of the criminal charges. So you'd want to expose that, and you'd want to expose that proffer agreement. So, again, Maria, the whole issue is going to come down to, was this Brady material? If this is Brady material, does it get you a new bite at the apple, if you will, as it relates to trying the case over again? And that's going to be first for Matthews to decide. Second, it's going to be determined whether or not, it goes up to the Court of Appeals, because it will obviously go to the Court of Appeals one way or the other. The last prong of the defense motion of Jennifer Crumbly, she had five different things on there. I don't think any of them are going to hold merit except for the first we just talked about. And the last is the ineffective assistance of counsel. And the ineffective assistance of counsel, there's the question, was she ever a witness in this case? Should she have been a witness? Because if you remember, the parents were held, in this location, and they were following the advice of an attorney, but yet that didn't really come out that they were following the advice of an attorney. They were just looked like they were fleeing the state, cashing in money. So that's going to be another issue for the court to decide.
Todd Flood, attorney at Flood Law, always a great way to lay out the case for us. My take home, though, about everything that you just said was that this is not over. We're going to see appeal on appeal upon appeal on this one. This case is not going away anytime soon. It appears to me anyway.
I think you're accurate on that. I think the facts really and the jury got the decision right. But you're absolutely right.
Yeah.
Put your bootstraps on.
Yeah.
It's going to continue. Unfortunately, sadly so.
Yeah, sadly so is right, because we want those families of those victims to certainly have some peace. Todd Flood,
Amen.
Thanks again. Todd Flood, thanks again for joining us today. We really appreciate it.
Thank you. Be well.
And we'll continue here on All Talk on WJR.